And the new one from Tesla for you, 88.5 FM, KMEZ. Good stuff from them. Brand new album from them. Just came out on Frontiers Records and certainly fits here on the Now and Then show. Good evening to you. Just after 8 o'clock, 8:20 to be exact. Eric Gessner hanging out with you tonight. And tonight we've got a special guest, the Guitars Under the Stars concert series. We've been cycling in as many artists from that thing as we can get into the station and my small little radio show. Well, tonight, a man who's just a great guitar player. I'm kind of new to his music, but you know, I got a chance to listen to it in the last few days here. Great stuff. Travis Larson of the Travis is on the phone with us tonight. Travis has worked with some of the best. Dave LaRue, of course, Dave, been on this show a few times. Steve Morris, he's worked with, boy, you name it. They got a three-piece band, the Travis Larson Band, and they will be here at Guitars Under the Stars, and that will be Sunday, the 10th of August. So here we go. Travis, good evening, and welcome to the Now and Then Show.
Hey, how you doing, Eric? I appreciate you having me.
Yeah, great. Great career for you so far. You've worked with some of the biggies, haven't you?
I've been real fortunate to, you know, despite whatever goes on in the music business over the years, you know, I've been real lucky that my music and my playing have gotten me to some of the people that I was a real big fan of and really looked up to coming up. And so, you know, despite whatever happens with the business and the record sales and regular radio stations that don't play this stuff like you cool people do, you know, I've gotten to play with some of my biggest heroes and gotten to hang out with guys I never thought I'd get to meet. And it's interesting because, you know, when you're first starting out in the music business, and, you know, just to give people a little background, I put out my first record in 1998, and, you know, I was playing long before that. That's just when we decided we were going to start trying to do this. But, you know, going back, you know, years and years, you grow up listening to these guys, and you think to yourself, you know, that they all live in ivory towers, and it's like this mysterious world. And, you know, it's really a bunch of, you know, cool artist guys that are playing music they love, and there's a great camaraderie with musicians. And you mentioned Dave LaRue. I heard you playing some Flying Colors before you had me on here. You know, I've been real blessed to be able to play with a lot of these guys over the years, just touring-wise or recording with them or, you know, getting to be friends with them. You know, Steve Morris and Dave LaRue are buddies, and, you know, those guys were heroes of mine when I was a kid. And I've recorded and played with Steve Lukather, another guy that I used to listen to on my local radio station. Not just the Toto stuff, but he had a band called Los Lobotomies, I'm sure you're familiar with. And you know, being kind of a fusion guy, I was way into that stuff. So getting to play with him and be good friends with him over the years, all that stuff is something that I would have never gotten to do if I listened to everybody that told me that I should play regular music, you know.
So how do you stay, you know, when you're an instrumental artist, because, you know, you do a lot of the guitar fusion stuff, how do you get yourself out there besides Facebook and you know, online? What do you do to promote yourself? It's hard to get instrumental artists on radio. We've had the Glenn Drover on the show, we've had Satriani and a few others, Andre Tonelli from Spain. How do you get yourself out there and get yourself heard?
Well, you know, these days you mentioned social media, and quite honestly, that's really the way you do it. And there is a vast wasteland of stuff to wade through out there now, because anybody can record an album's worth of material in their basement. So now, you know, you could look at it like a bad time, but you could also look at it like a good time. And I always look at, you know, the glass is half full. So to me, it's almost a reboot of, in a way, what we had back in the 60s and 70s, where the cream rose to the top. You had all these acts out there, but, you know, and that's how Cream got their name, right?
Right.
Eric Clapton said, you know, we should call the band Cream because, you know, they were just one of the better bands at that time. So now I think that really, really matters. You have to actually be a really good act and a really interesting, you know, interesting act or great musicians or whatever it is. But you have to be kind of top-notch at what you do and have integrity. And, you know, of course, I'm talking about what you're saying. You're talking about an instrumentalist and or somebody that's maybe playing music that's out of the commercial genres. That's a whole nother argument over there. But when you're trying to get your music out there and you're kind of catering towards the, shall we say, more educated listener, you know, the audiophiles and maybe the other musicians or the hobby musicians, really all you can do is go out there and just keep hitting it and hitting it, hitting it. And one of the things I notice in today's world is a lot of these guys don't go out and play live. You know, that's something that I always thought that's what a real band is. And we've been going out and touring and playing live, you know, a lot of shows a year since, you know, for coming up on, oh, I don't know, 17 years, something like that. And so if you don't do that and you rely completely on social media, you know, you may get people that are digging your music on a level, but they're not going to go that extra step like you do when you see a live band and you connect with them and you kind of invest in the thing, so to speak. You know what I mean?
Oh, yeah, I do. That's interesting that you bring that up. You got to tour. You got to get yourself out there and get in front of your fans. I like, you know, like, for example, I'll give you a good one, Great White. Those guys are out there touring. They're out there with the fans. They've done the boat thing where they get on the boat and they play with a bunch of other bands. And they're there for the fans, right? And even though, you know, we all know what happened to Dimebag Darrell, they're up person close and personal with their fans, and they get it. They understand that they have to connect with their fans, and that's how you build your audience base.
Well, and you mentioned, obviously, one of the top of the heap for, you know, my market is Joe Satriani. And there's a guy that never stopped playing, right? I mean, he certainly came in at the right time, and he'll tell you himself he's had his breaks and he's been kind of you know, real lucky and privileged to be where he is. But on the other hand, he's out there playing how many dates a year? Every time he comes out with a record, he does a world tour, you know. So on any level, you know, even if you can't go out and do world tours and you're not making tons of money, you got to invest in this thing, and you got to go out and really do it to really kind of make an impact. At least, you know, that's been my experience. And you know, I'm from originally from Southern California, where growing up, you know, in the late '70s, early '80s, this is a completely different genre. But there was a band called Black Flag with Henry Rollins. You remember this band?
Oh yeah, I grew up in Southern California, my friend. I graduated in high school 1978, so
okay,
that'll tell you,
perfect.
Right? I'm right there. Yeah, I'm right there with you.
So you know, those guys would go out and they would play their butts off until they were, yeah, I mean, they were killing themselves. And so we've always adopted that philosophy because that's what I grew up with. So whether or not I'm playing that kind of music, I've always taken that work ethic and said, you know, we got to go out and black flag it. And that's what we called it. You know, you get in the van and, you know, if you're not willing to invest, you know, your full time and efforts into getting out there and trying to make a living doing it, then chances are you're not going to get out there and make a living doing it. I mean, but like anything else, if you force yourself to do that, then you don't really have a choice. You have to figure out a way to make it work. So eventually, you know, eventually it does, hopefully, if you're doing something that's valid enough to where hopefully some people like it.
And we do like it. I tell you what, my friend, we're speaking with Travis Larson here from the Travis Larson Band. He's part of the Guitars Under the Stars concert series coming up in Lebanon, Oregon, August 8th, 9th, and 10th. And we've got your album here, Shift, recorded in 2013. Tell us a little bit about this album. I want to play the song Shift. So tell us kind of how this album came about and maybe a little bit about the song here.
Sure. Yeah, this is the current album that we're still touring on. We usually do about 2 years on a record before we give up and move on. But every album is a little bit further along, hopefully, as far as us as players and writers and production. And so I think it's just a continuation of that. But to tell you about this specific song, just a little insight on it. I started out as a keyboard player when I was like 10 years old, okay? So growing up, again, you know, back when we were talking about it, I was also into bands like ELP and Yes, and you know, Rush was a huge band. But But with the Keith Emerson thing, you know, my first influences were like, you know, Keith Emerson and Chick Corea and even Herbie Hancock. And so the opening of this album, I thought it would be fun to do something different. Every album we've always opened with, you know, either like a drum groove or something guitar oriented. And so this one I opened up with a flat out just overdriven B3 because I thought it would be cool to kind of go back to my roots and do kind of a little homage to Keith Emerson. So that's what this is.
There you go. Love the B3. Here we go. Travis Larson Band. This is new from them called Shift. Title track for you, 88.5 FM, KMUZ. We'll be right back with Travis Larson. But first, here's some tunes. There you go. Big guitar, big bass, big drums. That is the Travis Larson Band. And that's off their album Shift, title track for you right here in the Now and Then Show. My special guest tonight, Travis Larson. Travis, how long did it take you guys to record the album?
Well, usually it's... we actually set aside specifically time to do that. You know, a lot of guys kind of work on stuff as they go. So generally from start to finish with, you know, concentrated efforts, whereas it's like a full-time job, it takes 7 to 8 months maybe for us to get a record out. But I usually get off the road and actually start writing and, you know, spend a while doing that, then bring the band in, and then we start hashing stuff out as a group, and then we start recording it. And that's, you know, kind of a rough idea of how we pulled together, but... I started writing for Shift in October, November 2012, and then we had a little bit of an interruption in the middle of working on it because January of 2013 we went out with the Aristocrats and did a tour with those guys, and so, you know, I think I finished demoing the songs before we did that tour, and then when we came back, we had all these songs to kind of go to work on as a group, and that's how that worked. And so sometimes we end up getting interruptions where it's worth taking a break for, and that was certainly one. And then we just did another tour with those guys this last January, so it's turning into maybe an annual thing.
Well, that's nothing wrong with that. That sounds like fun. As long as the guys are having fun and it works out. Sure, why not, you know?
So we love those guys.
Yeah, I got a question for you. I saw in the production credits on this album that your bass player, Jennifer Young, she shares some of the production duties on this album with you. And how did that come about? It's pretty rare to see, you know, a woman as a producer like that, especially in, you know, this kind of genre. So I had to ask you about that.
Well, it's very cool that you noticed that. She's actually co-produced all of the records, and... really kind of, you know, partner in crime in this whole thing. You know, our running joke is she's my pint-sized Dave LaRue.
There you go.
And
I get that.
But, yeah, she really is a big part of the production hat with the whole thing, and she's also in charge of usually the visuals and things that go along with the album packaging. Even, you know, this is the 10-year anniversary of a record we did called Burn Season. And for that record, we had Hugh Syme, you know, do the design, and she worked really closely with him on that. And then she's always involved a lot with, you know, the production aspect of adding, you know, kind of ear candy and what, you know, whether this harmony works there, that sort of thing, adding, you know, whether the keyboards should be more or less, you know, things like that. But definitely my partner in this thing for the last 20 years now.
And her fantastic bass chops. Don't forget about that.
she's a mean machine. She is what we call our secret weapon. I make no mistake, Dale and I truly realize when we get on stage where all the eyes are looking, and we know it's not at us.
There you go. Well, we can't wait to see all you guys. Now your drummer, Dale Moon, how long has he been in the band, and what does he bring to the table?
Dale has been the drummer for this band, really, since the beginning. You know, we had had some sort of rough different incarnations of Travis Larson or Travis Larson Band before we put out our first record, you know, when you're just kind of finding yourself and finding musicians. And Dale's a funny story because although he's a guy that grew up listening to Rush and Steve Vai and all this kind of crazy proggy stuff, he was playing with a hip-hop reggae band when I met him. And it was this band that was big kind of on the West Coast called Rocksteady Posse 20 years ago. And they used to go out, and they were a party band. You know, they'd be the band that came to the college town, and the whole place would be jumping to where the floor was moving, you know. And he was playing with this band until, you know, doing 250, 300 nights a year, whatever it was, and 3 hours of night, a night of this music, and just riding on that hi-hat every night. And eventually he blew out his rotocuff in one of his shoulders, right? So he was literally rehabilitating himself when I met him, and everybody was saying, this is your drummer. And to be honest, you know, the joke is the first couple of times we played with him, he couldn't play because he had this injury. But over time, you know, it started to come together, and you know, he's been the guy ever since. And he's really helpful and really patient with us with trying to pull some of this weird music together and trying to see this vision through. And you know, he says it's the band he always wanted to play, and so I think you know, hopefully it's lucky for him that we pulled him out of a reggae band and put him into this prog band, because that was his real first calling, I think.
So what I always say is, why stand in the way of a man and his dream? There you go.
Yeah,
great story.
Exactly.
Yeah, exactly. So let's do another song off of the latest album. And gosh, what did I do? Oh, here it is. Shift. I'm like, set it down in two different spots here. And there's a lot of great songs on here, and we can't get to all of them tonight. But one that really stood out for me was Double Tap. There's a few, but Double Tap really stood out for me as well. What can you tell us about the making of this song and kind of where your head was when you were laying down a groove for this?
Well, Double Tap is definitely the, I guess, the most organically put together, didn't have a plan song, which is interesting because it's interesting you pointed out, because a lot of people really like that song. And we've just kind of started trying to figure out how we're going to do that live, because there's so many layers. And live we do a lot of looping and things like that to try and fill that space. But I have to figure out exactly how we're going to do this one, because it's a lot. But it started out where it was just that little tapping pattern that you hear kind of as the background of the song. And there really wasn't much to it. It was almost more of this kind of Trey Gunn, crimson-y kind of thing. And, you know, we were messing around with that and then messing around with these kind of jam solo sections. And then what really made the song, and this goes back to talking about Jennifer as a, kind of a co-producer, is she goes, you know, there's not that we're a hooky band, but she's like, there's no hook in this band or in this song. There's no melody. You got to come up with something. And so, like, the opening thing that you hear and kind of the running theme through the song, which is the last thing that was laid down, all the complicated stuff was all put down, and then this is the part that ends up being the main part of the song, is this kind of three-note arpeggio melody that sounds almost like a James Bond theme. And so this song, kind of, we weren't even sure it was going to make the record, and now it ends up being a lot of people's favorites. So it's interesting that you pointed it out.
There you go. I love the story of that. That's great. So let's do Double Tap. We're speaking with Travis Larson, Travis Larson Band, part of the Guitars Under the Stars concert series in Lebanon in August. Having a great time tonight on the Now and Then Show. You are listening to 88.5 FM KMUZ. That one's called Double Tap, KMUZ, with the Travis Larson Band, and that's off their latest release that they're touring on, Shift. We have Travis Larson on the phone tonight. Travis, where are you calling from tonight?
I'm calling from San Luis Obispo, California, which is about halfway between LA and San Francisco.
Right, exactly. I grew up down that way. My sister lives in Irvine, and of course, they all go surfing down there by the plant, so
It's all good. Funny. I was on the beach yesterday, and they were pulling people out of the water because of all these shark scares that are going on.
Really? Yeah, you know, it's weird. Up here in Oregon, we've had a lot of folks drownings, if you can believe it. The water's so cold, and it's pretty hot up there, and we've got quite a few this year. We're in double digits already in the last couple months, so people, be careful out there.
Yeah, exactly.
Exactly. So I love this album, Shift. It's such a good album. A lot of cool tunes and a lot of, you know, different, you know, I like the way you texture everything and layer stuff. And you know, your guitar tone sounds different with each song, it seems like. You really mix things up. And is that what you try to do?
Yeah, certainly with, especially something like Double Tap that you just played, I definitely mixed it up on that one with a couple of different flavors just to give it, you know, there was two guitar solos, so they had to sound like two different guys, right? But
right.
One thing I was going to mention about that song, listening to it on the, you know, on the phone here, I haven't listened to it in a while, and I forgot there's a big long piano solo in that, which, thinking back to the studio on that, I had to really get my piano chops back up to play that solo. I was just listening to it going, wow, that's not bad, you know?
That's great. Yeah, well, we're glad you could join us tonight to hear your piano parts back.
Yeah, I started out as a keyboard player, and I haven't done much of that on record. You know, a few small things here and there, but and there's always, you know, being a band that's influenced by Rush, you know, we do a lot of that kind of stuff on stage where we'll, if I record keyboard parts on the record, we'll try and figure out a way to, if we can't play them on stage, at least we can maybe trigger a sequence or something with our feet while we're doing something else with our hands. And that's one of the reasons that song is going to be tricky. But yeah, really playing some serious piano on a record I haven't really done. So that reminded me that I had done that, and I'm thinking now I'm really thinking how we're going to do it. I think one of the ways we might do it is make it a bass solo.
Oh, there you go. Jennifer will love that.
Yeah, because you know she could make it interesting, and that might be the live version. We'll see if we ever get that worked up. But yeah, talking about changing guitar tones and that sort of thing, I'm not afraid of that. I haven't ever really gone after I do have, you know, a sound, kind of a main sound that I like, but you know, when Jimi Hendrix was coming up, if you listen to his records versus his live thing, I mean, it's two completely different animals, and the studio is kind of anything goes at this point, I think. When you're doing your first record, maybe your second, you're kind of trying to convey, you know, what the live band is or what you have been for the few years before leading up to that record. But then you got to start making, you know, it interesting. You have to start coming up with fresh ideas. And so at this point we have enough material where we'll record anything that we think is interesting, and then we can figure out or not figure out how to do it live later, because, you know, even on Shift, we've been out playing more than half the record, but some songs end up just being studio songs, and that's okay. It's still coming out of your head, and it's your vision. And I don't think there's anything wrong with the limitlessness of the studio, you know?
You know, one person I always thought that just did great takes on live songs, and they're never the same, and he always tries to throw the band. I'll let you take a guess. Not a guitar player, but a piano player, Bruce Hornsby. And that guy does great versions of his songs, you know, instrumental stuff, you know, different takes on his songs, and they're always completely different, yet they're still the same. You know what I mean? I mean, he does just a great job of doing that. He's a great jammer. And you really, like, take a song and turn it into Comfortably Numb and do another, you know, three or four songs, and then White Wheeled Limousine. You know, I mean, he's really excellent at doing that. And he's a jammer, too. And it's funny that he can take a song like that and just completely, like, twist it around a little bit, but it still conveys the same sense, I guess.
Yeah, it's interesting that you mention him, because he's such, in this day and age, I think, I mean, there's a circle that knows him, of course, but such an underrated piano player, musician these days. You know, I know he had his kind of time in the spotlight, but he's still so great and so out there. And, Yeah, if you ever get a chance to check him out, his shows are amazing.
He is amazing. I've seen him like, I don't know, four or five times, and one time solo with a piano, which was just incredible. I mean, just seeing him play live like that just would almost move you to tears by himself with a piano. That's it. Amazing.
Isn't it fun to do that stuff sometimes when it's a little different?
Oh, yeah, I love it. I mean, I love it when folks do stuff like that and twist it up and make it different instead of, you know, rehashing the same old thing. I love it when they play all the new songs and maybe just a few of the old ones. I love that.
Every couple of years, when I get a wild hair and we, you know, every record, we come out with maybe an acoustic song or two or something that's, you know, along those lines. And there's enough material now to where we can do a set of that stuff, almost kind of pseudo-classical duet type stuff. And so, you know, it's fun to every once in a while really challenge yourself and go out and do that stuff, but it's so much harder and so much scarier than going out with the band when you're amplified and you're cranked up and you've got the drummer behind you keeping you solid and all that sort of stuff. But it's a good challenge, and it's I think it's great for an audience to see people do that sort of thing.
Yeah, just to try something different. It's a lot of fun, you know, and most of the time it works, you know, sometimes, you know, but it's, you know, what you guys want to do and have fun with it, and it's great, great stuff. So let's do another song off of Shift here. We'll just slow it down a bit. I heard a lot of Steve Morrison this song. The song is called Bright Eyes. Talk about this one a little bit and just the feeling you got when you guys laid this one down.
Well, this is an interesting tune that, yes, you are correct. There's a lot of Steve Morse feel in it now. And the original kind of, you know, grain of sand that became this song was this really weird piano chord progression that I was playing, which happens under, I guess you'd call them the choruses or the bridge. I never know with instrumental music, but there's this main theme that comes through, and it's really disguised now under this almost Steve Morse-like melody. But the real deal is that this piano chord was so kind of sour sounding, and so sort of outside that it almost sounded like some of the background music for the original Planet of the Apes. You remember this movie?
Yeah, I've seen it several times.
So it's almost like you're just pounding these random chords on the piano. And now it sounds like one of the kind of sweetest, easiest to listen to sections of the song. But originally, the chords that are behind that, and, you know, they're very disguised now. But originally, they sounded so dissonant that we said, this kind of sounds a little bit like Planet of the Apes, when none of the other song was built around it. And so, again, Jennifer comes up with, she goes, we got to call it Bright Eyes, because in Planet of the Apes, Charlton Heston's character is who?
Oh, there you go. Yeah.
He's Bright Eyes. Right?
I forgot about that. Yeah, I totally forgot about that. Now I get the connection. There you go.
Yeah, so nobody would ever hear that in a million years, so I suppose that's what makes it an interesting story. But, yeah, and as always, a lot of Steve Morse coming out in my playing. You know, I try and disguise that more and more these days, but this is a song where I didn't disguise it very much. And, you know, I started playing guitar because of Jeff Beck, and then Steve Morse is, you know, one of my biggest influences a little bit later in life, and like I say, now, you know, being friends with those guys, but that definitely comes out of my playing as well.
All right.
This is an example.
All right, let's listen to Bright Eyes. We'll be back with Travis Larson in just a minute. You're listening to the Now and Then Show on 88.5 FM KMUZ. FM, KMUZ, Turner, Eric Gessner, and the Now and Then Show. Just about 9 o'clock, we're on the phone tonight with Travis Larson from the Travis Larson Band, part of the Guitars Under the Stars concert series. Travis, of course, playing on the Sunday of the Guitars Under the Stars Festival, along with Lita Ford, Pat Travers, Gary Hoey, Bruce Boley. Travis, how cool is that? That's a hell of a lineup, eh?
You know, it's funny because I've got friends playing every single day, and originally, you know, as it was coming together, the schedule, you know, it was, oh, well, you're not going to be playing this day, and, oh, man, well, my friend so-and-so's playing, and then you're not going to be playing this day, oh, my friend so-and-so, and then when I got the Sunday, and then they put Lita Ford on there, all my teenage angst came back, and everything else went out the window, you know?
Nice.
I said, okay, all the nights where I sat there and watched Headbangers Ball and saw Lita Ford, That's pretty cool, right?
Yeah, that is cool. So, yeah, that's a great lineup. It's a great thing. I mean, there's a lot of instrumental guitarists coming to the festival, which is kind of cool and pretty unique, I think.
Yeah, it's really, really great that they're doing a festival like this because, really, nobody is. You know, with the exception of the Crossroads Festival, which we all know, there's nobody doing anything else like this in the country that I know of. And if they are, please, you know, let me know about it. But I was really, really excited to see these guys putting this together. And, you know, I've been kind of on board since early on and really happy for them to be, you know, supporting this genre, especially, you know, up there in Oregon, which is, you know, it's a little bit kind of out there, and it's just nice to see that they're doing something in a nice area where people can camp and have a great weekend, and it's not in the middle of, you know, where you would normally predict something like this would go on, like, you know, L.A. or New York, or it's cool that they're doing it out there where some different people can see a show like this.
Yeah, and they're trying to make it family-friendly, too, so it should be cool for the kids, and you know, I'm sure you guys will be mingling with the folks out there selling CDs and T-shirts and things like that, and folks can say hi to you.
Oh, absolutely, and I'm going to want to hang out and watch all my friends play that day, too. I've known Gary Hoey for a long time, and, you know, I was really excited to see Bruce Boullier playing because the last time I saw him was several years ago. He was doing the G3 tour with Paul Gilbert, and haven't seen him ever do a solo show, so that's exciting. It's exciting to see Pat Travers, who, you know, my friend Dave LaRue actually used to play with Pat Travers for a little while. So, you know, it's kind of a big family. Everybody sort of knows everybody or knows somebody that knows everybody. So it's going to be a fun hang.
I've had Pat Travers on the show before. Your buddy Dave LaRue has been kind enough to join the show twice and one more time, and he's going to be a show contributor.
Oh,
when,
wow.
When you hit three times, you're automatically a show contributor.
Gotcha.
There
gotcha.
You go. So Dave is a great, great friend of the show. You know, great guy, always answers an email and says hi, and you know, just having him on the show is part of, you know, a part of the Steve Morris Band and Flying Colors is just huge. So tell me a story about Dave I can use on him next time. I'll maybe record this and play it back to him. So tell me something about Dave that maybe we wouldn't know.
Oh, boy, I'm not sure I can get away with that kind of stuff. I know Dave pretty well.
Well, tell us a cool story about Dave.
Well, I'll tell you a cool story about Dave. I'll tell you just, this is a little bit of, just, this is not the cool story, just a quick fact. I was with Dave on his very last night that he played with Joe Satriani, and that was at the Joe Satriani 20th anniversary show, which was a lot of fun. But a cool story about Dave. Here's a story that I'll convey. This is a Jennifer Young story that I'll convey to you. I don't even know, a long, long time ago, early 90s, Jennifer went to a Dixie Dregs show, and this is before she was playing music professionally. She was just a kid. And Dave came out, and he was standing around backstage loading dock somewhere outside the theater, and she was totally starstruck, literally walked up to him and said, "You're my biggest fan." You know, pulled the reverse, like, you know, almost like... like that Stephen King movie, you know, about the crazy fan. So she says that to him. Fast forward to, you know, years later, and we do shows with him every time we go through Florida, and she gets up and does a bass duet with him where they've done a couple of them, but usually they end up jamming on an old Stanley Clarke song like School Days or something. And so, you know, as a kind of a bystander, it's kind of fun to see that going from, you know, her being really good friends with Dave from being, you know, the starstruck, oh my God, there he is person, you know. So there's a cute story about Dave. Is that, that's family friendly, right?
That's family friendly. You betcha. Right. So, you know, we're getting to almost to the time of, letting you go. This has been a fantastic interview. I appreciate you spending as much time as you have on the show tonight. Really appreciate it. We are looking forward to seeing you at the Guitars Under the Stars concert series. How can folks get a hold of your CDs and message you and Facebook and all that stuff?
Well, yeah, I'm on all the stuff. You can look up Travis Larson. You can Google me and you can find me. But the website is TravisLarsonBand.com. That's Larson with an O. And then we're on Facebook. You know, I have a personal page, and there's a Travis Larson band page on Facebook. We're on Twitter, all this stuff. We do a lot of Facebook stuff as far as interactively. So if you check out the Facebook, usually we post videos from the road on a daily basis, that kind of thing. And then the website is where you want to check out all the tour dates and make sure that you check them out before you go to the shows, because things change, and they'll change on the website definitely before they'll change, you know, in press or wherever else. So check out TravisLarsonBand.com. And let me just say, you know, I don't want to steal up all your time either, but you mentioned it being a great interview. It's a great interview because of you, my friend. I really appreciate you doing a show like this, and you really do an excellent job. And I can't tell you how long it's been since I've had such interesting questions asked. It's really nice to talk to somebody that knows what's going on. So great job on the show, and thanks for supporting this kind of music as well.
Well, thank you very much, Travis. I really appreciate that. That means a lot. You know, I've had everybody through here, you know, Michael Schenker, Paul Rogers, James LaBrie, Damon Johnson. You know, I've had three of the guys from Great White. Of course, Mark Kendall's been on twice. Just great guys. And it's fun to get, you know, artists like yourself to, you know, let down their hair. It's not the Morning Zoo program, you know, and it's not, you know, Rockline where you get the callers in and they're kind of dumb questions sometimes. You know what I'm saying? You get a little more time to expand, sure, and tell your story and get it out there. And you know, it's really easy. Once I start talking to you guys, I don't have to do much.
Well, yeah, but you'd be surprised at how people can screw that up.
Yeah, there you go. So before we let you go, you know, thank you very much for being on the show. I want to go back to your album, Sound Mind, and I was listening to this thing last night here, and one song that really kind of caught my ear was track number 8, What's What? I thought that was a really cool song. So talk about this one. This album came out in 2011. Little different trip than Shift, you know, of course, it's, you know, different album, of course, but, good stuff. Yeah. And it's a lot of fun, and What's What just stood out for me.
Well, it's funny that you like that song. Let me tell you about the album real quick first. The album actually was top three editors picking Guitar Player magazine, which was a pretty big deal for us because I didn't spend any advertising dollars to do that. You know, it's a small independent band, and we don't take out, you know, full page, you know, ads and spend thousands and thousands in music magazines. So when these guys write about you, it means they really like you. And so that was really, really cool to find out that those guys still write about something because they like it. So that album is special in that regard, and for many other reasons too. But as far as the song What's What goes, interesting that you like that because it's really just a potpourri of classic rock riffs. It's really just, we're trying to blend like some Who and some Rush and whatever else into that song, and then throw in some odd time signatures for good measure. But it's really just like a feel good rock and roll song, and it's a lot of fun to play. It's basically bashing out power chords, and it's that's funny that you pick that one.
Yeah, I you know, I hear this stuff and it kind of rings in my head, and I just sometimes I can see it through the trees, which is another one of your songs, or Forest
right,
of the Trees.
Right. Well, the title What's What is because we had so many influences we were just wearing on our sleeve in that song. We were trying to, you know, it was kind of the question of, well, is it a Rush influenced song? Is it a Who influenced song? Is it, you know, what is it? What's what? You know,
there you
which
go.
Which parts are influenced by which bands? That kind of thing.
Well, we'll let you, the listener, figure it out. Travis Larson, thank you very much. We are looking forward to seeing you here in August. Hopefully we can hook up soon. And anytime you want to come on the show, you get bored, every Thursday night I'm here, 8 to 11 p.m. Pacific. You can just call in, Facebook me, and you can just come on for 5 minutes if you want. But you are always welcome, my friend.
Oh, absolutely. And you do a great job there. Again, I really appreciate you supporting live music, supporting interesting instrumental music and interesting progressive bands like Flying Colors and all the stuff that you're playing, my friend. It's very cool to see somebody doing that this day and age. It's refreshing.
All right. Thanks, buddy. We'll talk to you soon. Travis Larson, right. There he goes, 88.5 FM, KMEZ. Let's do What's What on 88.5 FM. The Travis Larson Band, 88.5 FM, KMUZ. What a fantastic guest. Travis Larson, thank you very much for being on the show. Wow, that was just a fun interview. I mean, that thing just flew by. We did almost, 50 minutes, I think, there. Just an incredible guy, incredible artist, and some great stuff there. I'm kind of new to his music, and boy, I tell you what, I'm going to be looking him up here in the near future. Good stuff, and great band. They're coming to the Guitars Under the Stars concert series. Thank you very much, all who tuned into that tonight. I know we've got a lot of folks from the Guitars Under the Stars ensemble. They're listening tonight. Thank you very much, you guys. I really appreciate it. We'll have more of those guys coming up